Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome back to this Friday edition of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. Now, if you've been listening along, thank you so much. It has been so fun to get to know the listening audience and to see all of you and hear from so many of you through email and through my social media, through the radio station. It has just been a joy to be a guide on the side. And as a reminder, that is what Dr. Nurse Mama means. That's how I came up with the idea. It is the doctor is using my professor brain, the nurse is my hands-on nursing experience, and the mom is my heart as a mom. I've got four kids. I used to have four teenagers, but my oldest has just turned 20. So I have three teens and a young adult. My oldest is 20. I've got an 18-year-old, a 16-year-old, and a 14-year-old. So I really am just right there alongside you in the trenches of parenting in this crazy world where it seems like every day there is something new that we have to be worried about. And it can be hard to figure out, are we doing it right? I think every parent out there is asking, am I messing up my kids for life? And I ask that too. I mean, here I am. Yes, I'm a professor. Yes, I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner. But, you know, that's not enough. It's honestly just not enough. And that's why my faith is so important to me. It just is the glue that holds everything together. And those professional tools that I have, yes, they're helpful, but they are not the most important thing. Now, I'm excited to tell you that Stephanie, my producer, and I have been talking, and we have decided that Fridays are going to be special shows called Ask Dr. Nurse Mama. Now, that's where I'm going to take your questions. Now, for now, I'm going to take the questions that you've sent in to me through my email. So you can find me at drnursemama.com. That's drnursemama.com. You can email me questions, and you never know, I may be able to answer one of your questions here on a Friday. But I'll give you a pulse of what people have been asking me about in my practice, in the community, and at school. I teach pediatric nurse practitioner students every single day at a university to care for the next generation. So we'll talk about what they're talking about and the kids that I'm encountering on a daily basis. So if you listen in on Fridays, you'll be able to hear all of the latest news. Now, if you follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Dr. Nurse Mama, you'll see that I have something for you, a resource called Parent Alerts. Now, this is something that comes across my radar. And whenever I start to get a lot of questions about something, I will issue a parent alert. And you can see some of those things that I have already shared. And if you're Instagram savvy, which it's okay if you're not, because let's be honest, I'm still learning on that too. And I get a lot of help from my teenagers. But if you'll go to my stories, you'll see a lot of the past alerts and you'll see kind of what is on the hearts and minds of parents. And I think when we see something new that happens, we just worry and we think, oh my goodness, like, should we be afraid of this? And parents, let me tell you, if we parent like that and adopt a fear-based parenting stance, then we're just going to let our minds be taken captive by any threat that comes. And we have this knee-jerk reaction where our head is constantly jerked to the side and we see this squirrel or that squirrel. And we're like, oh my gosh, you know, human trafficking, fentanyl, oh, all of these things coming to get our kids. And we can focus on fighting against culture, which that is an important thing to do. But I've said this before, and I'll say it again, that is a defensive strategy. We need a matching offense. And in fact, I think we need an offense that is even more powerful, that's going to put points on the board to win the hearts of our kids. Now, culture is fighting to steal your children, to destroy your children, to lie to your children. But culture is not competing to win the heart of your child. They don't care about that, frankly. And that's where we have the advantage as parents. And so I really reject fear-based parenting. And I want parents to feel empowered to adopt a faith-informed view of parenting. Yes, there are things that are scary, but we have a higher power. We have the God of the universe who loves us, who knows us intimately, who cares more about our children than we could ever dream of caring about. And that is pretty powerful. So on these parent alerts, I talked about things like rainbow fentanyl. There was a new app called the Gas app. The social media was actually made illegal in Utah. I talked about that, or what's geotagging or sextortion, what's a Borg, all of these things that you may thinking, I don't even know what those things are. And you know, I think that when we don't know what things are, it's a great point of conversation with our kids, and we can initiate conversation. It's so important for us to do that, because they're not just going to come and ask us things on their own. They're not going to say, oh, hey, I saw this, you know, headline in a grocery store, a news, you know, magazine, or, hey, my friends were talking about, you know, this subject at school. A lot of times they're not going to come and ask those questions, but if we are constantly initiating conversation, constantly reminding our kids that they have an open door, that they can always ask us anything, no matter how awkward, that is going to help build relationships. So some of the other things on these parent alerts that I've had questions about include juice jacking, hot girl walks, AI chat bots, I can't even hardly say it, deep fake porn, situationships, simp nation, AI catfish cloning, chroming, over-the-counter birth control, bed rotting, the Saturn app, revenge porn, girl dinners, AI unstable diffusion, lullabop, Luke's maxing, and trank and name drop was the last one I talked about. Now, if I have totally lost you and you thought, what language did Jessica just start to speak? Because I don't even speak that. Listen, friend, you are not alone. A lot of these things I don't know about, but I hear about them in my practice. And again, we're here learning about them together. So one of the questions that I got this week was this new name drop feature. It's an iPhone feature in the iPhone operating system 17.1 and the watch operating system 10.1. Now, parents, we are really guilty of this ourselves. Whenever there's a new technology update, we're really quick to scroll through the pages and pages and pages of instructions and information, and we just click yes, accept the terms. But a lot of times we really don't understand what we are giving away, the privacy rights that we are giving away, and the rights to our information that we're giving if we're using on a platform, especially for social media, because most of those platforms are free. And I'm sure that your parents or your grandparents taught you that nothing in life is ever free. And we are giving information in exchange for quote unquote free use of that platform. Now, this new feature, this new update, you may have had it. It's called Name Drop, and it allows users to exchange contact information just by bringing their phones together in close proximity. So you bring your phones together, and what will happen is that your phones will just start to buzz. And then if you look at it, will give you an option to receive only or to share. Now, the device does have to be unlocked, and you have to tap on those options, either receive only or share. But I was picturing, you know, people in my generation who maybe are not as tech savvy, that would be me, or, you know, other people who think, oh my gosh, you know, your phone is going off and is this an Amber Alert or what is it? And is this new feature called Name Drop? Now, what it will do is it will give the person close to you all of your contact information. Now, if you want to know what contact information it's giving you, you can go to settings on your iPhone and click on My Card, C-A-R-D, and it will tell you what contact info is being shared. Now, I've seen a lot of police warnings about this. Police saying, you know, don't, that this is terrible. The world is ending. It's scary. And again, you know, there's some truth to those warnings, but I just refuse to adopt fear-based parenting. The main thing, if you listen to these police warnings, is that they are worried about children and the elderly or people with other vulnerabilities. So we're going to talk about kids today because that's what we do. Now, kids do not have good decision-making. The executive decision-making happens in your frontal cortex, and that is not fully matured until the mid-20s. They're making decisions with parts of their brain like the amygdala. And when we ask them, you know, what were you thinking? The honest truth is they weren't thinking because they didn't have the capacity for that kind of decision-making. So what I'm worried about is cybersecurity. So because of the way that kids think, they believe in this phenomenon called a personal fable. It's a developmental concept that we use in pediatrics. And they believe that, yes, bad things can happen, but they're not going to happen to me. Like, nothing bad will ever happen to me. And so when we talk to them and use these fear-based strategies, it's why they don't work. It's why the war on drugs didn't work. It's why just say no didn't work. It's because we're using these, you know, fear-based strategies, but they don't connect with our kids because they may think, oh yeah, that's good for my friend, but that's not going to happen to me. And I'm worried about people exploiting them, about them not understanding what they're doing when they're exchanging contact information, or letting someone else borrow their phone and then take contact information. This can be used for identity theft, or it can be used for stealing things or spoofing things that are actually pretty common among teenagers on social media, where you can actually duplicate someone's profile, and then people think that you're that person. And so then they start talking to your friends or getting information on you, or things that may seem like a harmless joke because kids can't adequately reason through those consequences. So we can definitely expect scammers to be out, especially the holiday season, to exploit this new feature. But more concerning to me is, as a decade-long expert and advocate against human trafficking, I absolutely believe there is risk here. So let me tell you something maybe that you don't know. Traffickers often use recruiters to groom children into a human trafficking situation. Now, if you listen to my podcast last summer, I did several episodes specifically about human trafficking, but I've been working in this space as an advocate in the national and international levels, state levels, county levels, for the last decade. And this may be something that you have misconceptions about, just like I did when I started working in this. As parents, we're often more afraid of kidnapping into trafficking. And many of you may have seen a post going something like, you know, I don't usually post this on social media, but I was almost abducted by a trafficker in the grocery store tonight. And then they'll tell a story about some, you know, men who looked nefarious, who followed them around and maybe took some pictures, and, you know, they went and got the managers. I've seen several posts like that. And usually what happens is I'll start getting tagged and they'll say, oh, Jessica, oh, this was human trafficking. And I am sure that that situation, whatever it was scary. And I'm sure that there were people up to no good. But listen, parents, here's the truth. It is really not in a trafficker's best interest to kidnap someone in trafficking in the United States of America, because what we're seeing is that that would elicit a police response, and they don't want that kind of attention. The methods they use are much more subtle. Now, when we come back, I'll talk more about this and the vulnerabilities they have on the phone, and we'll get back to that name drop, and I'll tell you how the risk intersects with with trafficking, and I'll tell you three simple steps you can take on your phone today to protect your kid from it. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to this Friday edition of Dr. Nurse Mama. And if you were listening in the first segment, then I was telling you that Fridays, for the time being, are now going to be Ask Dr. Nurse Mama days. Now, these are the days when I will answer questions that I have gotten during the week, either by email or through my social media or through parents in my community or just in my practice. I'll try to answer as many questions as I can. And I hope that I can get to yours, but you know, there's so many, I will pick and choose what seem to be the most common issues of the day. Now, today we've been talking about name drop. This is a new feature of the iOS 17.1 and Watch operating system 10.1. And I was telling you, in the middle of telling you, about my concern for its connection to human trafficking. Now, it doesn't have to do specifically with this app name drop. There are so many ways through technology, through the use of a smartphone, that children can be vulnerable. And this is what I'm seeing, is that trafficking is moving from the street to the smartphone. Because again, there are so many ways to exploit people online because of the way kids' brains think. If I tell you online, I'm a 13-year-old friend of a friend who goes to a neighboring school, they're going to think you're a 13-year-old friend of a friend who goes to a neighboring school. They don't think that you're a 37-year-old person in a foreign country who is trying to trick them into giving them intimate photos that they can then hold for hostage. So this can happen. And I really do worry parents about other people, nefarious people, traffickers, or other abusers or exploiters getting a hold of your child's contact information. Let me give you a story of a human trafficking advocate and survivor that I work with. This girl's name is Holly, and Holly actually met her recruiter in a mall somewhere near Truckerton, New Jersey. Now, a recruiter is usually someone who is very good looking, very charismatic. They're not scary. They have a lot of money. They have a lot of charisma, or riz, as this generation would say. And once again, I hear my children cringing even now. Yes, but I do know what it means, even if I can't use it exactly right. But this is what they will have. Recruiters will try to get someone to talk on the phone. And this is how Holly met her recruiter. She was walking through the mall. She said she always just felt a little less than people, other people around her, her peers. She felt like she had a little less money than, she wasn't quite as attractive, she wasn't quite as popular, but she felt like people had it worse. And when this recruiter saw her in a mall, she felt like, she said, that someone finally saw her, like really saw her for the first time in her life. And this recruiter did not try to coerce her into a white van and drive her off somewhere and inject her with drugs, which is often the fear that I hear. This recruiter just simply waved over with his finger, just saying, "Hey, come here." And he wrote his phone number on her hand and got her phone number, and they basically just started talking over a long period of time. That is how recruiters can gain trust and exploit vulnerability and groom kids into a trafficking situation. So I've seen a lot of cases like this. Now, again, I don't want you to be scared, because we can empower our kids, going back to this name drop where it automatically shares information. Now, for people who are networking at a professional event, that could be something really helpful. That could be something that is convenient. But for kids who maybe can't make decisions that quickly on such a complex level to assess risk, I definitely think you need to turn this feature off of their phone. So we don't need to panic. That's the takeaway. This feature does have security layers. You're not at risk just having your phone out in public, but any cybersecurity expert will tell you that human decision making is the weakest link in any security situation for any device. And teenagers don't have that decision making that makes them a strong connection. So I definitely think some safety guardrails here are appropriate. So this is how you turn the feature off. You simply go to your settings. If you're in a place where you can open up your phone right now, you can do it just as I'm telling you. But open up your phone, go to settings. Under the general settings, you'll see a label that says AirDrop. And when you click on that, you'll see a section in gray. Now, this is if you have the new operating system that reads Start Sharing By. And then you'll see a bringing devices together option. All you have to do is just slide that bar to off and just turn the feature off. Now, I would talk to your kids about this and just say, turn this feature off. Now, if there's a situation that comes up and you want to intentionally share, it's just as easy to go into your settings to turn it on to enable it for that moment. But I don't know about you. I've been on a plane many times where people have tried to AirDrop me pictures, just strangers. I don't know what they are because I'll always remember, oh, I forgot to turn off my AirDrop. So those features are always good to have off, the Bluetooth features or the AirDrop features, because those make your child discoverable to strangers. That's what makes them discoverable. Now turn them on when you're using them and then turn them back off when you're not using them. And I would definitely recommend talking to your kids about this, just talking to them about their security. Don't try to scare them. Just say, hey, I know that you don't see this as a big deal, but I do, and I care about your safety. Now, teens are developmentally wired to, I think, automatically roll their eyes and sigh and tell us how, you know, we just don't know. And I know so much more about technology than you do, Mom. And I can't believe you're trying to tell me about this. You're just old fashioned. This isn't going to happen. But listen, parents, the more that we give that instruction, and more importantly, the more that we communicate, I care about your safety. I just want you to be safe. And I'm going to do everything I can to help you be safe. They really do listen. So that is name drop. I got a lot of questions about that this week. Another issue that I got questions about was a new drug called Trank. Now, this has been in the news. This is Trank, T-R-A-N-Q. Now, what is that? Well, believe it or not, again, I'm telling you not to be afraid, but this is a little scary. But don't worry, we'll find the hope in the end. The fentanyl crisis just got upped a notch because Trank is actually fentanyl combined with, okay, I'm going to say it, but I don't think some of you are going to believe me. This is fentanyl combined with horse tranquilizer. Yes, I'm talking about tranquilizer that veterinarians use to sedate horses. Okay, that is what it is. It's also called zombie drug, trank dope, sleep cut, and Philly drug. So the DEA actually started putting out warnings this summer. Now, if we look back to 2015, trank, and just looking at this a specific study in Philadelphia, trank was found in 2% of Philadelphia heroin overdoses. But by 2019, it was 31%. They found trank present in a heroin overdose. And now, today in 2023, it's 90%. Like, we are seeing this. So the White House actually issued an emergency response about it this summer. Now, I was just recently in Seattle and I saw this. They call it zombie drug. And if you are in a big urban area, you may see people just standing on the street, like just kind of looking down at the sidewalk and swaying. And that it very likely could be attributed to trank, this fentanyl that is combined with horse tranquilizer. Now, we have to talk to our kids about the risk of substance use, and we have to empower them to act if they see it or they experience it. This is really important because some kids will use medications or take something that they don't know what it is or just try something once. But it is concerning because for the last year, from 2021 to 2022, which is the last year that there is data available, there were 107,735 people in the United States who died of an overdose. And more concerning, because of this trank that's in there, the horse tranquilizer, that's not an opioid. So the reversal emergency medication that you may have heard about called Narcan that now police are carrying with them and other emergency response people have access to, and we're even talking about putting this in schools because it reverses fentanyl, it doesn't work on trank. Well, people who are using this drug, they can think that's great because then I don't get it reversed and you don't stop the high. So the concern is that trank sometimes can seem safer to teens because it's not heroin or cocaine. It's not a controlled substance. It's actually pretty easy to get off of websites because they sell it in powder and liquid form with very little safeguards to ensure that it is a legitimate veterinary purchaser. I'm sure that there will be more regulations in place to do that, but it's pretty easy to call up and say you're ordering for a vet. And it actually can be purchased through Chinese suppliers at like about $6 to $20 a kilo, which is dirt cheap. And the truth is that drug dealers are always looking for ways to enhance a high, to do something novel, to do something new, to do something different. And that is what is happening here. So do we need to panic about this? Well, in short, no. Conversation here goes a really, really long way. We need to have open conversation about drug use among teens. And, you know, I think about even my kids, and all of my kids know someone who has at a minimum experimented with substances. And it is more common than you would think. And actually, it can be more common in affluent areas because if you have more expendable income and you have access, if you have a car to go somewhere to pick something up, it's just going to make it easier to get. And one of the scary things is that we're seeing kids who are ordering drugs off of Snapchat or other social media apps, and they're doing this all with emojis. So it's really difficult to codify that in the federal language. We can't say, you know, oh, they were selling trank. It was because maybe it's just an emoji. Maybe it's a horse and a pill. And how can you prove in a court of law that that's what that is? And it seems very normalized because we do so many things off of social media. You can click to shop and go straight to your Amazon cart or order something else off of some boutique or a sports venue or buy tickets. And so it just can seem normal for kids to say, oh yeah, I'm just going to get this medication. Like they think it's not that big of a deal. But the FDA does have an initiative called, I'm sorry, the DEA has an initiative called One Pill Can Kill. And this fentanyl is so potent that one pill can kill. And so that's why we need to talk about it. And when you look at the percentage of deaths from overdose from the first time that somebody, a teenager especially, ever took a pill, it's really kind of scary. And so again, having conversations to tell them, if you see this among your peers, if you're worried about it, you know, ask them anytime. I said on a previous show, and actually it shocked my husband. He came home and said, I have never heard of that. Tell me that is not true. But another kind of popular party game is for kids to all bring their old prescriptions from home, and they'll empty them out, put them in a bowl, in a glass bowl, because usually that's more visually appealing, and you just play Russian roulette with a bowl of pills. You take the pill out and take it and see what happens. Folks, that is terrifying. That is absolutely terrifying. So we need to make sure our kids are empowered to say no. Now, sometimes that can happen because we have unused or leftover prescriptions at home. So it's always a good idea to get rid of those. I know it can be so tempting to hoard those medications. I'm a nurse. I know especially what that's like. And I have that, you know, at-home pharmacy like it's a crutch. But really, if you have teenagers in the home, especially if they're having friends in and out, or if they're struggling with this, then that can be really easy for them to access medication that they don't need to have. Another good practice that we can have as parents is to never share medication. Now, a lot of times we may say, oh, here, you know, I got prescribed this, but you can take some, or your sister had some, you can take some. We have to be really thoughtful about that, because what we're doing when we do that is we're normalizing taking other people's medication. And we're saying, yeah, it's okay. If you think it's reasonable, it's okay. Recognizing that they don't have the same kind of decision-making capacity that we do. So it's important for us to always tell them, only take medication that's prescribed to you. And even if a friend is going to offer them something like an ibuprofen, or what they think is an ibuprofen, that would be really important to tell them, just take your own, make sure that they have their own. And that those are ways that you can create a safe medication environment in your home. Never, and making sure that all your medication in your home is locked away, especially to protect kids who may be visiting or visiting friends. Now, a lot of parents will think they'll flush old medication, but that actually can contaminate the water supply. So you can talk to your local pharmacist about the safest way to dispose of unused medication. And most pharmacies will have a take back medication day once or twice a year where you can take all of your old prescriptions there, and that will be good. Another thing that's preventive is making sure that you're careful about accepting opiate prescriptions for your teen, especially for dental procedures. Now, this is getting their wisdom teeth taken out, and most of the time, ibuprofen is sufficient. So that is something to definitely talk about, because as providers, you know, it used to be just very normal for them to prescribe pain medications. This came about from a movement, you know, a couple of decades ago where we looked at pain as a vital sign and normalized treating pain, but that had some definite downsides as we saw the increase of the opiate epidemic. Well, I'll finish up talking about that when we come back, and I'm going to talk about mental health medications next. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to this Friday edition that we are now calling Ask Dr. Nurse Mama. We're trying this out for the time being because all during the week, I get so many questions in my community, in my practice, through email, and through those of you listening to the show. And I wish so much I could answer every single question that comes in, but I will do my best on Fridays to set aside some time and answer those burning questions that are coming. It seems like every day there's some new threat that has us scared, and we're thinking, what do we need to know? But let me give you some encouragement. We don't need to be experts in these issues. And sometimes we tend to do that. As soon as we hear about what I was just talking about, TRNC, I mean, we are looking up everything on the internet. We're watching all the news. And that is really our coping mechanism to feel like we are in control. But let me help reshift and reframe your perspective. Instead of becoming an expert in these health threats, become an expert in your child. Study your focus on your child. learn about them, watch them, observe them, try to get to know everything about them. And then when you learn about these health threats, the honest truth is you usually only need a little bit of information then to go and plug that into wherever your child's heart is going to respond. Now, some of them, you know, they may like to have big, long conversations. Some of them may just like, hey, I just need a one bullet warning, you know, and that's what it's going to happen. But you can also know ways to build relationships with them. So I encourage you during this holiday season that's coming up, as we're talking about these health threats, you know, that are so scary about name drop and trank and other things that are coming up, I encourage you to try to say yes to your child as much as you can. Look for that thing that they love to do and then engage in that. So they may be constantly asking you, hey, you want to come throw the basketball with me? Now, I am terrible at basketball, like absolutely terrible. But if my son asks me to try to throw it, I'm going to try to throw it, even if it means humiliating myself. If you have a kid that's into painting, if you have a kid who really likes a specific movie, try really hard to be in that space and surprise them and engage in an activity that they like. The other thing is that it allows them to teach you something. Kids love to teach their parents, and so they can teach us about a video game that they like, or the characters on a show that they like, or maybe even the ingredients of a smoothie that they make, something like that. And then it gives them kind of an equal power differentiation, and where they teach us something, then we teach them something. And it's not just always lecture, 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 which is really important. Earlier this week, we had Larry Fowler, who is founder of the Legacy Coalition, a ministry for grandparents, and he told us, and it stuck with me all week, unsolicited advice almost always comes across as criticism. And this is what can happen when we start to talk to our kids about some of these threats that we have. If it's unsolicited, then it can feel like we're criticizing them or we're questioning them. But if we look for those natural ways, those natural points to bring something up and allow them to teach us, it can be helpful. So if I hear about one of these things, I send it to my kids and I say, have you heard of this? What do you know? And then I find out and they say, I have no idea. I don't know what that is. And I'll say, well, this is what I heard. What do you think? Or they'll say, oh yeah, I know about that. No, that's not what I heard. And we can have a really good conversation. Now, before the break, I told you I had another question from a listener specifically about mental health medications, and I am going to answer that question now. So a lot of times what happens is when kids have mental health concerns, they may go to a healthcare provider, and that healthcare provider recommends a prescription or medication. Now, this can be a really scary thing, and I know that there are feelings all across the board on this. I know there are people who hold on to the prescription and say, this literally saved my life. And I know there are people who say, I will never take a medication. They are dangerous. It is, you know, it violates my principles of faith. I know that we have that. And I think that that's the important point here when we're talking about mental health diagnosis, is that there is no one size fits all approach. There is no magic cure that is going to work for everybody. And we really have to look at these cases on an individualized basis. So let me back up a little bit and just talk generally about mental health. A lot of times parents will ask me that they'll say, what are the signs that my child might be having mental health concerns? And I'll tell them, you know what? You know the signs. You know what they are because you know your kid, and you just get that parent's spidey sense that something is not quite right. Something is off. But what happens is we treat that differently than we treat physical health complaints. I want you to think about when your kids are small and maybe they have a cold or a runny nose and they wake up in the middle of the night and their ear hurts. Well, you automatically pick up the phone and you call your primary care provider and you say, I think this looks like an ear infection. I just want to make sure. You go in, hopefully really quickly that same day or the next day, and they'll tell you, nope, it's not an ear infection. You're like, great, I just wanted to check to make sure. Or they'll say it's an ear infection and you think, great, let's go ahead and start treating it. Let's get this over with and get them out of pain. Yet when our kids have symptoms of mental health conditions, we get afraid and we kind of wait because we know when we go in, there's not going to be a rapid anxiety test and there's no pink stuff like you get for strep throat. And we also don't want the stigma. We don't want people to know that our kid is having anxiety. What would that say about our parenting? Or what would that say about them? Are people going to judge them? And then you start thinking about the provider and you think, well, I don't want them to have a mental health diagnosis on their chart. I definitely don't want them to have medication. Those are all very normal feelings when you're going in. But here's what I would encourage you to do. First of all, you need a healthcare provider who you trust literally with your life. And it's really important that you like them too. Now, this may take a little while to visit different providers and find that one that's the fit for your family, but it's a very important asset to have. It's a very important advocate for you to have, and it will make this decision making a lot less stressful for you. Now, as healthcare providers, we are trained to assess for anxiety or depression, which are the two most common mental health conditions in kids. And in fact, one in three kids has a mental health diagnosis in the United States right now. I think there's a lot of factors going into that. Part of that is living at the speed of a smartphone. Part of that is the world being so unstable. It has a lot to do with social media and smartphones, but a lot to do with the way that we interact socially. And they may be digitally connected, but they're relationally disconnected. But that's more for another time. But when you come in, we have surveys usually that we give, little questionnaires that you can fill out. And we can pretty easily partner with you as a parent to say, hey, this is something you should be really concerned about. Or, you know, this is something I think is just pretty normal given the circumstances. And here's some tools that you can have. Now, it's not going to be an automatic diagnosis of anxiety or depression. These symptoms have to be present for a significant amount of time, and that can be different for each diagnosis, and they have to be severe enough to disrupt your daily life, which makes it important to go in early, because the earlier the intervention, then the easier it is to reroute those brain habits that are becoming entrenched. Now, for example, with anxiety, this is mostly going to be negative thinking that escalates. So somebody will start thinking, okay, I feel anxious. Oh, what if this happens in the middle of my test? What if I can't breathe? What if I have to go to the bathroom? What if I have an accident? What if, you know, I pass out right here in the middle of the class? I mean, and thinking starts to escalate. Well, if you don't know any tools to de-escalate that, it's just going to stay the same. So this is often what I see when patients come in to see me in a primary care setting. It's been going on for a long time. And usually, you know, parents have tried to find some way to fix it, whether that's through diet or that's through vitamins. You know, all of those things can be helpful. But, you know, really there are some cognitive behavioral therapies, which are just basically brain retraining exercises. I'm talking about, you know, really out there things like intentional gratitude, like learning to say what you're thankful for in a time when you're anxious, or deep breathing exercises, just breathing in a square, things like that. Those seem really simple, but they're not easy. And actually, cognitive behavioral therapy is the gold standard for treating anxiety or depression in kids. The trouble is that it can be hard to find. It can be expensive. It can be not covered by your insurance. It takes time. So it works, but there's a lot of barriers there. But for most kids, that is going to be sufficient. Now, there are some kids and some situations where medication can be a helpful tool. Medication is for sure not a cure-all. It is not, oh, let me just take this pill and that's it. sometimes medication can quiet the symptoms of anxiety or depression just enough so that you can function to learn some other coping skills, whether that's through counseling or through therapy or those kinds of things. And there are some medications that have a good safety profile and a long track record of being used in children. And so that's something to definitely talk to your provider about. And again, it's so hard to answer this in a one-size-fits-all approach, but I would tell you, you know, one mom sent me the side effect profiles for a medication for depression. And I said, you know, if you look at the side effect profile for this medication, this other medication, it will scare you a lot too. And she said, what is the medication? And I said, amoxicillin. So we've all heard those drug commercials where at the end it's okay, and your hair could fall out and you could lose your arm and, you know, you could have lose control of your intestines. I mean, all of those things that they say at the end, those can be scary, but that's why it's important to have a provider that you trust. But I would say medication is never the answer, but it can be a helpful tool. Now, when we're looking at mental health, I think one of the things that is really overlooked, again, is prevention. And the little things that we do as parents every day in our house, they have a big impact on mental health. I'm talking about things like what we eat, our nutrition habits, our exercise habits, our sleep habits. These all really do impact our mental health. And not too long ago, I was having a conversation with my daughter who was telling me she had been having some, you know, just anxious thoughts lately. But it was so great because she said, so I went through and started to think, okay, am I getting enough sleep? Is my bed clean? You know, am I making my bed every day? Do I have a bedtime routine that is signaling my brain to sleep? Am I exercising enough that my body is tired at night? Am I eating junk? You know, am I drinking too much caffeine? All of those things are really, really important. And it's really great to know that gratitude has a lot of science. I talk about this a lot, but being grateful in situations. Now, in Philippians, the scripture tells us, in everything, give thanks and present your request to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. And I think sometimes this scripture is so misinterpreted, and we think we have to be thankful for everything. But that's not what it says. It says, in everything, give thanks. So we don't have to be thankful for mental health conditions. We can be thankful in the middle of them. And we know that people who practice intentional gratitude have lower blood pressure, lower risk of anxiety and depression, and they have generally better mental health outcomes, which is great. Another thing that is really helpful in improving mental health is having a family dinner together at least two or three times a week. Now, I've said this before, it does not need to be gourmet with jazz music, although I'll give a shout out to my husband here. He's Italian. He cooks. One day he said, can we just stop pretending that you cook? And I'm like, yeah, I think so. I'll stop pretending as I stand in front of the refrigerator thinking, what should I make? And he'll say, I'll just make this. But it is great. And so sometimes he will make the most delicious Italian food, and it does make for a better dinner. But even if it's just me passing out peanut butter and jelly around the island counter saying, hey, what were the highs and the lows and where did you go? And tell me about your day. Meaningful connection to a healthy relationship between parent and child is the number one predictor of resilience and good mental health outcomes. And as Taylor Joy Murray said, who was on earlier this week talking about her Gen Z journey with anxiety, it doesn't need to be fixed as much as it needs to be journeyed with. So I encourage you to have a grateful heart for whatever you may be facing today. And when you have those fears face you of, oh my goodness, my kids are facing this, think, in all of this, where can I be grateful? I'll see you Monday.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.